having 100 sheep and losing one of them does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the one that is lost until he finds it. When he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders and rejoices. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and neighbors, saying to them, "Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost." Just so I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance.
Or what woman having 10 silver coins, if she loses one of them, does not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? When she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, "Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I lost." Just so I tell you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. Then Jesus said, "There was a man who had two sons. The younger of them said to his father,
'Father, give me the share of the property that belonged to me.'
So he divided his property between them. A few days later, the younger son gathered all he had and traveled to a distant country, and there he squandered his property in dissolute living. When he had spent everything, a severe famine took place throughout that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed the pigs. He would gladly have filled himself with the pods that the pigs were eating, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said,
'How many of my father's hired hands have bread enough and to spare? But here I am, dying of hunger. I will get up and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired hands.'
So he set off and went to his father. But while he was still far off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion. He ran and put his arms around him and kissed him. Then the son said to him,
'Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.'
But the father said to his slaves, 'Quickly, bring out a robe, the best one, and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. And get the fatted calf and kill it. Let us eat and celebrate, for this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' And they began to celebrate. Now his elder son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing. He called one of the slaves and asked what was going on. He replied,
'Your brother is coming, and your father has killed the fatted calf because he got him back safe and sound.'
Then he became angry and refused to go in. His father came out and began to plead with him, but he answered his father, love the stories of Jesus. Most of our vacation Bible school memories probably include acting out stories like this one, like the Good Samaritan. Remember the parable of the sower spreading the seeds among the weeds in the rocky ground? The servant who buried talents. And that's usually as deep as those stories get for us. They teach us to be good neighbors, to listen better, to try to use our gifts for good purposes. Amy Jill Levine, who is the author of the resource we'll be using as we look together at short stories by Jesus, says that down through the centuries, the parables have been allegorized, moralized, Christologized, and otherwise tamed into easy platitudes such as God loves us and just be nice. There's nothing wrong with a good and sweet story, and sometimes it's nice. In the midst of a world of conflicting and complicated messages, to focus on something very basic and very simple. But if we think about who Jesus was and what Jesus did, we need to be careful. Because Jesus didn't seem to do much to help people feel comfortable. We often talk of Jesus coming to comfort the afflicted, yes, but to afflict the comfortable. And the stories Jesus told played a big role in communicating this message. The stories would take on a different meaning and purpose depending on the point of view of the listener, depending on who else was there in the audience, depending on what was going on in their lives and in their community. In fact, even the stories themselves have already been put through the lens of interpretation. The words we have in our Bible are not likely the exact words that came from Jesus' mouth. Rather, they are words that come to us through the lens of those who took it upon themselves to write them down and pass them along. And that's why have the same Jesus story that looks very different depending on whether it's Matthew telling it, or Mark telling it, or Luke telling it. Different emphasis, different timelines, even different characters sometimes. And yet, that doesn't mean that these stories are not of essential value, nor does it mean that they do not contain important truths. In fact, makes them more powerful and impactful. When we are forced to look more deeply at the stories, we also find that they connect more deeply with our own lives and our discipleship. As Amy Jill Levine says, when we seek universal morals for a genre that is designed to surprise and to challenge and to shake up and to indict, look for a single meaning in a form that opens up to multiple interpretations, we are necessarily limiting the parables and so ourselves. So are you ready for a deeper look? For the next several weeks, we're going to be opening up some stories that most of us have probably heard hundreds and thousands of times. But we're going to try to look at them with new eyes and listen with new ears. Closely at the context in which they were first heard, who these listeners were, what their lives were like. And we're going to try and get a sense of how the message might speak to us today, how it might stir up our lives and our hearts, how it might cause us to think about God and about our role in the world in new ways and from different perspectives. So, here we go. Our first parable is actually three, and all three center around things that are lost. A lost sheep, a lost coin, a lost son. There's someone looking for these lost items, and there's a party when the items are found. And generally, we've interpreted that these are all stories about sinners repenting and and God graciously offering forgiveness and reconciliation. We are the ones who are lost, and after admitting that we're lost, God celebrates, helping us find our way back home. And yet, let's think about that just a little. If you look at the story of the lost sheep and the lost coin, there's really not any repenting going on. The sheep, they don't confess, unless maybe I don't understand sheep language, but I've never seen a sheep confess. It would also be hard to say that the coin did anything wrong. If anything, the blame should be assigned to the shepherd and to the woman. They are the ones who failed in their responsibility to keep up with the things in their care. And even in the way these stories start out, the audience would have already gotten the sense that these weren't just cute and sweet little stories. Jesus starts out by saying, "Which one of you, having 100 sheep and losing one of them, does not leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the one that is lost?" Probably every person listening would have murmured, "Not I." That doesn't make sense, to leave 99 sheep in order to go after one. You would be exposing those 99 to danger. Sheep are not known for their intelligence. We can almost imagine, as that shepherd came back with that one sheep, that now he's got 99 all scattered around. That would not make any sense in the usual economy of things. And then we have this man with two sons. The listeners in Jesus' day would have been very comfortable with that introduction. It's a pattern of a lot of their faith stories. They would have remembered Cain and Abel, Ishmael and Isaac, Jacob and Esau. And they would have been ready for the younger son to play an important role. They would have remembered Joseph and the way he saved his older brothers from famine. David, the youngest, who became a king. And yet, there's some complicated aspects to this younger son. He's adventurous, he's daring, he's ambitious, but he's also wasteful and he's reckless. And while we often focus on the father and how forgiving and generous he is, when you think about it, his character is not quite so cut and dry. He's very indulgent with his younger son. In fact, while it would have been customary for him to bestow 2/3 of his inheritance on the older son and 1/3 for the younger son, it looks like he divides everything in half. And if we focus on confessing and forgiving as the central message of the story, we don't really have a clear sense that any of that actually happens. Yes, the younger son comes home and puts himself at the mercy of his father, and yet there's kind of even a conniving sense to that plan. Notice, when he approaches his father, he still puts himself in the role of son, and not really as a servant. And his whole motivation doesn't really seem to be about talking about the lessons he has learned, but about feeding his hungry stomach. Sense that this family lives happily ever after, and that all is forgiven. Yes, the son comes home, but what's going to happen after the father dies? The younger son has already spent his part of the inheritance. There's the whole experience also of the older son. If he ended up going to the party. We don't know if any of these relationships are mended. Perhaps these stories are more complicated than we have treated them. And perhaps that also means they have more to offer to us as well, because I don't know about you, but my family can get complicated sometimes. Jill Levine invites us to consider some simple exhortations that can come from delving more deeply into these stories. First, she challenges us to pay attention to the things and the people around us. We assume it would have been obvious for the shepherd to know that one of his sheep was lost, or for the woman to realize she only had 9 instead of 10 coins. But both the shepherd and the woman had to be paying enough attention to figure that out. And their sheep and their coins had to have enough value for them to have the sense that something was missing. And in the story of the two sons, when you think about it, the one that was most lost was actually the one that stayed home. The older brother was the one who felt most disconnected from the family, who had the most resentment, who felt the least appreciated. And then Angel Levine encourages us to do whatever it takes to find the lost, and then to celebrate with others, both so that we can share that joy and also so that others can help prevent the recovered from ever losing their way again. And that celebrating should come even if everything is not all fixed and resolved. Don't wait to celebrate until you receive an apology. You may never get one. Don't stew in your own sense of importance, for there's nothing that can be done to retrieve the past. Don't wait until you can muster the ability to forgive, because you may never find that. Instead, Amy Jo Levine says, go celebrate and invite others to join with you. If the repenting and forgiving come later, so much the better. If not, you still will have done what is necessary. You will have begun a process that may lead to reconciliation. You will have opened a second chance for holiness. Take advantage of the resurrection, she says. It's not likely to happen twice. So, as you go about your week, I invite you to allow these stories to touch your heart. Imagine you're listening as Jesus is sharing them with you. Use them as an opportunity to reflect on what you might have lost, what might be missing, on the things or people you need to be paying more attention to, and the things or people you may need to value. Questions for us as individuals in our own faith journeys, but they're also questions for us to consider as a community of faith. How can we tell who or what we are seeking by our priorities, by the ministries we offer or don't offer? Who is missing? Gracious God, help us to pay attention more to the things and to the people in our lives. Help us take note of who and what we're missing. Help us to do whatever it